Hi, and welcome to NASIO Voices, where we talk all things state IT. I'm Amy Glasscock in Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Matt Pincus here in Washington, D.C. On today's episode, we'll be chatting with NASIO's newly elected president and Maryland CIO, Michael Leahy. Mike is certainly no stranger to NASIO and has served on the executive committee for the past few years until he was elected as president by his fellow CIOs at our annual conference in Seattle this past October.
We're looking forward to discussing with Mike his presidential initiatives as well as the top IT and cyber issues facing Maryland. So, Mike, welcome back to NASIO Voices, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So the last time we talked with you on the podcast was July 2020. That was episode 21, if anybody wants to go back and hear more about your background and how you became state CIO. But back in July of 2020, you were treasurer on NASIO's executive committee. And a year and a half later, you're our new president. So a lot can change in a year and a half. What motivated you to seek the role of president and move up in NASIO leadership?
Well, there are, you know, any number of motivations, but I think the most important one is I am amazed at what a wonderful organization this is and wanted to contribute in any way I could. And, you know, in talking to other members of the executive committee and to Mr. Robinson, decided that it did make sense to run for president, as they say. And here we are. So,
yeah.
It was a grueling campaign.
It was a grueling campaign, but with you as my manager, Matt, I
you're going to get me in trouble, Mike.
I'm trying, yes.
We certainly appreciate all the, you know, time that you've put into NASIO over the last several years and appreciate your willingness to take on this role because, I mean, it does take up a lot of extra time on top of being a state CIO, which isn't exactly a light job to begin with.
Well, it's a labor of love. It really is. I can't say enough about the organization, my peers in it, and obviously the NASIO staff. Everybody has been tremendous and I don't know where I would be as a state CIO without NASIO. It has been a terrific sounding board and a great resource through the years. So I'm just happy to be part of it.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to move on before people think we paid you to say all these nice things.
There you go.
He's sticking to the campaign talking point.
Okay, so I know that some of our former presidents have often had policy priorities that they wanted to focus on. Dennis Goulet, our most recent president, he focused on business relationship management. Do you have any presidential priorities that you want to give attention to during your term?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll only list the top 20. No.
We're going to have to need a bigger staff.
There you go. Yes, I do. And as you might imagine, knowing a bit about me, they center around privacy and identity. And how we are going to enter a period now where I think people generally are going to become more and more concerned about personal information about themselves and how it's handled and who has access to it. And it's going to fall to state governments to address this question because historically, states have more demographic information on their citizens than the federal government has ever collected and more than locals have. And obviously, although there is significant distrust of government, the further up government we go, most folks have a lot of trust in their state government and certainly more than the big tech vendors these days that are finding it very difficult to hide the fact that privacy has been a central focus of theirs because most of their business models rely heavily on using personal information either for advertising or for making certain that your behavior follows a particular pattern if there are things they'd like you to do.
Absolutely. So do you think it's your, you know, your legal background and your focus on privacy in past years coupled with citizens' growing awareness of their right to privacy that made you want to make this your focus, or is it even more than that?
Well, I think it does go a bit further than that, although those are both huge contributing factors. You know, I'm a bit of a data geek myself, and I've always been very interested in rules and how we as a society historically have made things work. Laws aren't the be-all, end-all. Custom and tradition and just, you know, our norms and mores have a huge impact on how we make our society work. And so it's the sociological side of this also that just fascinates me, that something which we have taken for granted, our privacy, has sort of disappeared without us thinking about it. And we were willing to exchange it for convenience, which is even more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So just lots of those kinds of questions make this not only, you know, something that I think has practical import, but just a really interesting academic challenge to figure out how it is that people make those decisions and how it is we historically look for convenience and only after the fact worry about the impact of that convenience. Yeah. So maybe we can avoid some other problems in the future.
I think, Mike, that's really important. You know, like younger generations, I'm thinking about, you know, my younger brothers who are in college, just assume, you know, they're oversharers, right? Everything goes on social media. They just assume we have no privacy. And certainly that can be a dangerous rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just switching gears for a minute, as far as your role as the state CIO in Maryland, have there been any permanent changes in the way you do business due to the pandemic?
Well, I don't know if they are due to the pandemic, but the pandemic certainly gave us the opening to experiment and test some things that may have taken years to implement otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say yes. And a number of those deal with process and efficiency, as you can imagine. I'm proudest of the fact that we have created an integrated intake process. Historically, folks were building whatever they thought they needed in terms of their IT repertoire. And today, it is all coordinated, and folks have to come to us first with a problem or a concern in English before we even talk about what technology they're going to utilize to address or solve it. And so that process has also led to finding a number of commonalities in terms of technology that people can use or can consider using that have led to certain efficiencies that we wouldn't have seen otherwise, simply because we as the IT department have an overview of what everybody is doing that we're now able to share with the rest of our sister agencies.
Yeah, that's great. And so obviously, you know, we've heard from many state CIOs that the pandemic was really a catalyst to implement these changes in a, you know, 3-5 year timeline in a matter of months. And certainly that's a credit to you all. Do you see these, you know, sort of these efficiencies being permanent, or are we sort of at a crossroads where we don't know if they were just temporary over the last year or so?
Well, I know they're permanent for this administration. And
right.
So my ultimate question becomes, is there something that we could do better that we just either hadn't thought of yet or haven't implemented? And so I think for the most part, they are permanent. The interesting thing is that the attitude that got us to this point is what is impermanent. As things mm-hmm. return more to normal, folks are more reticent to do things immediately. They would much rather study them and prove them, as they say, over an extended period of time and look at multiple alternatives rather than implementing programmatic approaches that typically, you know, as you said, we're done in days or weeks rather than over a course of several years.
Right. Well, that's great. And certainly a credit to you and your team. So can you tell us, Mike, what are your priorities for the state of Maryland in 2022?
Absolutely. Well, we have several. The first is to continue process improvement. We implemented what we call portfolio officers about 2.5 years ago, which fit very well with Mr. Goulet's priorities on business relationship management. And I'm really proud to say that it has been adopted by a number of other agencies in the state of Maryland that are starting to use our methodology, not just with regard to IT, but with regard to any of their business practices. So That's great. Is a real credit to the folks who were staffing the portfolio office and you know, taking the initiative to make that real. From a technological standpoint, we are making leaps and bounds in terms of our approach to cybersecurity. As you know, we moved from contractors that were basically business hours to building our own SOC in my agency, which is 24/7, 365. The one-stop portfolio continues to grow. We have almost 1,000 applications now that citizens can access. The workflow engine was demonstrably incredibly useful during the COVID pandemic in implementing not only our contact tracing and vaccine management programs, but a number of grant programs that agencies had the duty to get money out to small businesses and to individuals. One of the greatest stories is the Department of Commerce came to us with a problem in English, but they also had a solution. And the solution would have cost several million dollars and cost several months of time to implement because they had a backlog of almost 17,000 small business grants that they were handling about 100 a day. And my folks went over, utilizing the one-stop work engine, built them an application in 4 hours on a Friday afternoon, and completely cleared out all 17,000 grants on Saturday.
Wow.
So those kinds of things that people don't think about, the power of technology and the effective use of automation, really do give us great pride in what we're doing and, you know, the foresight to hopefully do even more for the citizenry to make it less expensive to provide services and to analyze what it is we're doing well.
Yeah. And it really sounds like a lot of your priorities are about, you know, increased collaboration across the other lines of business in the state. Seems like something that you've really focused on, certainly during executive committee meetings. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, certainly. That is absolutely true. When I took this position, my predecessor had put together a technically wonderful plan to build an enterprise. And shockingly and amazingly, most agencies didn't go along. And, you know, very simply, it was because there wasn't an explanation of what he was doing or why he was doing it. There was no time for change management or culture change. And so it became very obvious to me that, as we say all the time, we had to love these folks into our corner. The agency had a bad reputation generally for delivering projects over budget and way behind schedule. And so we had to earn their trust. And the quickest way I've always found to do that is to be very transparent and honest about both your strengths and your weaknesses and ask for help. And so we've done a lot of that. And, you know, it has reached the point where a lot of agencies, I think, are very comfortable asking us for help. One of the biggest changes is the Department of Health, which really is our largest agency in terms of budget and in terms of responsibility for Medicare and Medicaid, has completely coordinated all of their IT systems and their enterprise with ours. And it is giving lots of folks pause to think about what efficiencies could be garnered by larger agencies by cooperating with doing a bit more.
Yeah, and that's great. So the other thing that I wanted to ask you about was the NASIO Executive Committee voted to start having in-person events, starting with our October annual conference. And we are about to have our state CIO, CISO, and Chief Privacy Officer summits in beautiful Lexington. Why was it important, in your opinion, for NASIO to start having in-person events while many associations are still keeping things virtual for now?
Well, I think there are, you know, any number of reasons, but the biggest one is we are social animals. And I always find it far more valuable to talk to folks where I can see their body language and their facial expressions and in some ways, you know, have things occur serendipitously. When you live your life on Zoom meetings, there is no opportunity to run into somebody walking down the hall and say, gee, I really wanted to ask you about this.
Everything's so transactional.
It truly is. And so we lose a lot of the capacity to deal with each other, you know, individually and as people, as well as transactors. And I think one of the most valuable things that I've always found in NASIO meetings is that ability to interact with the other CIOs and with the corporate members and talk not just about the particular transaction at hand, but also about what's going on in their lives and how they've addressed other problems or issues that I may be having, or maybe that I've found a solution that's of value to them. And it's just rather difficult to do that in a virtual context, day in and day out, if you have a specific reason to talk about those things that you've scheduled. Certainly, it'll get handled, but that scheduling just doesn't occur. So very interested in the ability to see people. The other piece of it is I think it takes enormous courage, given the way the world is today, to find ways to seek what's normal historically and still give people that sense that they are safe and that their welfare, again, is central to what we stand for as an organization. And the October meetings were spectacular in that sense. I know there were a number of corporate members that had originally talked about not sending people, that when they heard of the protocols we were putting in place to make sure that concerns about COVID and other health issues were addressed, you know, made them change their mind. And so we had over 600 people, which is phenomenal given the tone of the world these days and the fears about the virus and other potential health threats.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the first part that you were talking about, I've always personally felt like relationships are built over lunches and dinners when you're talking about your family and, you know, things like that. And of course, you do have a working relationship and you talk about the work stuff too, but I feel like it's the other stuff that really kind of like makes you friends with these people, you know?
For sure.
It is really important. And it's hard to do that over Zoom.
Sure. And that's the word. They are friends. It's not just people working with. These people are people that, you know, we all are in these CIO positions for a relatively short time, except for Mark Raymond.
Yep.
And I plan to stay in touch with all these folks long after I leave state service. So, yes, what a tremendous opportunity to find people with similar interests and just among the nicest people I've ever met.
Absolutely. So circling back around to privacy for a minute, the last time we talked on the podcast, you were sort of the de facto state chief privacy officer for Maryland, but your state has just hired someone to do that job full time. So tell us, what was the impetus for making that a full time position in Maryland?
Certainly. Well, it is, again, part of Governor Hogan's centralization of our concern for security. And he signed an executive order last July that formalized the positions of a data officer and a chief privacy officer. And interestingly enough, the two folks, the data officer and the privacy officer, out of a number of candidates, were both people who had worked at the state previously. So they already knew a lot about what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And shared our commitment to strengthening the state's resolve and security. And of course, you know, I personally am just really thrilled that the governor finally saw that we had a great opportunity here by bringing in people with these skill sets and giving them the ability and the platform to further concerns about addressing privacy and addressing data issues in a comprehensive way that fits along with what we're trying to do to automate processes and to get folks just to think about who we're serving and how it is we can best serve citizens.
Yeah. Well, we're really happy to bring Marilyn on to our group of chief privacy officers in an official capacity. So very exciting. And so this time last year, I think we all had ways of describing 2020, some that we can't repeat on the podcast. But in so many ways, I think it was easier to kind of say, like, this is what 2020 was. And I think 2021 has been harder to kind of boil down and describe. Like, for me, the year has just flown by in a lot of sort of confusion. But how would you describe 2021 in a nutshell professionally?
Oh, professionally. Okay. So I have to be cautious.
You can say both if you want.
Which I use. Okay. you know, 2021 has been, in my eyes, a time of recovery. Mm-hmm. Folks have past that threshold where we didn't understand what was coming with the virus. Mm-hmm. We have moved away from many things being locked down. You know, we're making significant efforts to make sure that kids get to return to school and that professionally we actually do spend time seeing each other, as we talked about a few moments ago. And also, you know, addressing some new issues that have arisen. Obviously, the response to COVID led to a number of changes with regard to the government generally being more involved and spending money and changing a number of patterns. We're suddenly facing a new set of issues that we really hadn't seen before in terms of the supply chain and inflation and all of those sorts of issues that folks hadn't had to deal with ever before. So it's a great opportunity for us not only to, you know, courageously face these challenges, but also to look at the value of thinking outside of the box, as they say, or as I like to say, thinking as if there is no box. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing opportunity now to reflect on what it is we've done in the past that has worked and what hasn't worked and make it better. And so, although this has certainly been a very difficult period, I am very hopeful and very certain that, you know, folks are going to find their way through it and come out better on the other side.
Yeah, it's a great answer. Okay, so since this is your second time back on the podcast, you are familiar with our final segment, which we call the lightning round. Are you ready?
Absolutely. I am ready.
Okay. Question one, what are you looking forward to outside of work in the new year?
Oh, goodness. We bought a house in Florida, so go there when it's 20 degrees here and 70 degrees there.
Oh, yeah, that is exciting. Nice. Okay, question two. Do you have plans to ever race an Audi again?
I absolutely do. And I have not been to the track since I took this job. So I am very much looking forward to the end of the Hogan administration. And it's very fun for me because my son got involved in this sick habit I have. And he just went to the track this last month when we were all meeting for NASIO. So it shows my priorities. Yep. But I'm looking forward to going with him again real soon.
Okay. Question three. We just celebrated Thanksgiving. Do you have any family traditions for Thanksgiving or favorite foods?
Well, you know, the biggest, I think, tradition is that, like so many other folks, we try to get as many family members crammed into a house as humanly possible. But the one I have really come to enjoy, and it's my wife's fault, we'll blame her, she always finds people that aren't near family. And so we invite them. So this year we had a woman and her son who the rest of their family, has just not been around. Husband's in the military. Mm. And just what a wonderful opportunity to share our blessings with others and to just, as you say, get to know them better. The biggest tradition is, of course, now we are in what we're going to call the Christmas season. And so my wife is busy buying things that I will be required to hang from the house. It's going to be very interesting because we've run out of room on the front of the house. And so I'm going to have to negotiate with her about what items don't get to go up this year.
All right.
Well, Mike, I just want to thank you again for not only sticking to the campaign talking points, but joining us again, being a repeat visitor to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy talking with both of you whenever I get the chance. And hope folks enjoy this as much as I've enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, and we get to see you later this week, which we're really excited about.
Even better.
As am I. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks again for listening to NASIO Voices. NASIO Voices is a production of the National Association of State Chief Information Officers.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and please review us.
Talk with you next time.
Bye-bye.